So when I saw that the topic for October was impermanence, you know, being a Tibetan Buddhist, the first thing that pops into my head is death, which is probably one of the most profoundly direct experience of impermanence that we have as living beings. And so, you know, I didn't want to get all heavy-handed about it, because we've got death pretty demonized, I think, in our culture. It's either kind of out there, you know, famous people, political people, people out there dying, and we get quite caught up in talking about other people dying and how they died and how old they were and what happened. But I think we kind of sort of skirt around the periphery of thinking about our own death, which according to the Buddha is, and we know for a fact, is certain. But the time of death, who knows? And, you know, at the time of death, the only thing that goes with us is the karma that we've created, both the constructive, virtuous, and the not-so-helpful karma with us onto next life. So I wanted to kind of talk about it today on the way that I use it to really transform my mind and to really help me live my life in a really, really meaningful way. And in fact, thinking about death in one of our winter retreats here at the Abbey about, it's now almost 8.5 years ago, I thought about it during one of our winter retreats to the point where it really made me decide to put on robes. Not that I'm sort of suggesting that if you thought of death deeply that you're all going to want to put on robes, but it really made quite a profound effect on my mind and in my life. So that's and some of the points that I used during that winter retreat is what I wanted to share with you today. One of the things that I thought about quite a bit during that retreat is that is the metaphor of likening death to driving around in a car with no gas gauge. I mean, you know, we've kind of come into this life, and due to our karma, we have a particular model that we have, sort of like the model of a car. And we've got a tank in there as far as our karma, our cause of the conditions for us to be in this life, but we have no idea how full that tank is. So we're going on this road trip, and we have no idea when that tank is going to run out. So I use this quite a bit, you know, as a metaphor. I love cars, even though I'm a monastic. I've worked on them. I can identify cars from just the logos on the backs of the bumpers. And so I've always managed to find this to be a helpful metaphor. And that even though we take care of these vehicles that we have, we can't guarantee that they're not going to break down or they're going to be in need of an overhaul or that they get in an accident. You know, we just don't know, much less run out of gas. And that it's eventually going to happen to each and every one of us because we're living beings. And that the profundity is one of the points that the second thought. Okay, so the first one is about the metaphor about the car. The second one is, it kind of segue into it, is that we exist because the causes and conditions for us to exist. All right, we have this karma that we've brought in, that we have the causes and conditions. They arise, they abide and cease moment by moment, these causes and conditions. And when those causes and conditions begin to subside, when they start to end and finally cease, so do we. We are conditioned phenomena. We exist simply because the causes and conditions for us exist are in play. And when they aren't, we're not. So on a lot of levels, we're like a cup, another conditioned phenomenon. And one day that cup is going to fall off the table and it's going to split into who knows how many shards. Same as us. We're conditioned phenomena, just like a cup in lots of, you know, lots of ways. And so, you know, we can think about this intellectually, understanding that we're going to get sick, we're going to develop disease, we might even suffer a tragic end. I mean, we can really kind of think about that, kind of play out the scenarios. We know people who have died in different types of ways. But if we truly, deeply think about the fact that death is certain, that we have no idea when it's going to happen, and we don't take anything with us but our karma when we die, is that if we don't think about that, we're kind of like a car. We just put our lives on cruise control. You know, we're not really thinking much about what we're doing. We don't know what our motivation is that when we get up in the morning, or why we do what we do, or say what we do, or think what we think. And that we do really spend a lot of time distracted by a lot of small things, you know, a lot of trivia. We squander our precious lives, and instead of trying to cultivate purpose and meaning, we're just fueling sometimes a lot of our anger, our pride, our jealousy, our attachment. So we kind of think about it, you know, in our heads when we're courageous enough to even go there, but we've really got to get it down into our hearts. And so another point that has helped me to kind of tie these pieces together on thinking about death is that in our tradition, there's a very simple saying that if you don't think about death in the morning, you've wasted your morning. If you don't think about death in the afternoon, you've wasted your afternoon. And if you don't think about death in the evening, you wasted your evening as well. So that is really something to think about, to think that there's no way around it. No matter how beautiful we are, no matter how wealthy we are, no matter what we do for a living, no matter how many people love us, in the end, all we take is the karma that we've created this life. And trying to be happy in this life, to get what we want, to be pissed off at when we don't get what we want, that's all that goes with us. And to really try to put together, you know, what does that mean for us? What does it mean to get serious about the certainty of our death? And that rather than obsessing about, you know, someone said something to us at work that hurt our feelings, or we're having arguments with our roommates because they didn't do the dishes, or somebody forgot to invite us to dinner with a group of friends, when we think about death a little bit more than just an intellectual exercise, we start to realize when we get into these moments where we're kind of in a hissy fit or we're really getting pissed off or hurt, we say, if at this one moment my body decided, the causing conditions for me decided to cease, is this the kind of mind I want when I die? Do I want to be angry? Do I want to be scared? Do I want to be jealous? Do I want to be pissed off? Do I want to be craving and clutching onto somebody if I should die right now? It's a helpful little exercise. I mean, you can really... really get into it. I mean, we have so much drama in our life anyway. Why don't we create these scenarios that really can do something for us? And that, and what's really helpful is that at the time of death, no matter when that is, the mind that we have at that time is totally the kind of mind that we have habituated through the course of our life. So if we want to die with a mind that's filled with gratitude, a mind that's filled with, you know, I lived a pretty darn good life. You know, I was kind most of the time. I made amends with the people that I had to make amends with. I had bodhicitta at some extent, even fabricated in my heart that I thought about others and that I want to be the best I can so I can help them. Whatever we put into our minds while we are alive, whether it be love and care and joy and compassion, or it's going to be fretting and attachment and anger and pride. At the time of death, that's what's going to be there. It's not like we can have our whole life full of craving and attachment and being resentful towards somebody. And at the time of death, we finally decide we want to have joy. We can't like just snap our fingers and turn on a dime. The mind is going to do exactly what we've been training it to do for the past 12 years, 20 years, 50 years, 85 years. Because, you know, if we want certain kind of results, we've got to create the causes. And at death, you know, whatever our bodies are doing, whatever our minds are doing, we've got to have, as best as we can, some little piece of the Buddhist teachings that we hold on like an anchor, something that's going to really guide us into our next life. And one of the things, just to kind of bring it a little bit more real, the other thing that I use is that at the Abbey, we receive a lot of prayer requests from all over the world. And we dedicate all of our virtue during the course of the day to them. People grieving at the death of somebody they really care about. And this past year, we've had a member of the community find out that a good friend committed suicide, that a young child died from a rare form of cancer, that two young women, best friends just out of college, died trekking in Nepal during that earthquake. And that one of our dear Dharma brothers, not far from here, his daughter was murdered by her estranged husband at 32 years of age. These are the kind of things that kind of bring it, and it's not to get depressed about our life. What the Buddha says is we think about death to bring peace and vibrancy into our life, because we cut to the chase. We say, okay, if I'm going to die tomorrow, what kind of purpose, what type of meaning do I want in my life? Do I want to be squandering it over this piddly stuff? Because these people, when they woke up in the morning, when that young daughter and those two good friends and that child, they didn't think they were going to die that day. You know, we've got to put that question up, because we don't know what our fuel tank is looking like right now. We have no idea how much gas we have in our tank, what this vehicle is carrying. So it's really helpful. And if you know somebody in your life that has lost somebody, or you've lost somebody, take that as a gift. Take that as a gift to sort of bring some clarity and some joy into your life, knowing that this is like a snap of a finger, this life. It's like a flash of lightning in the sky. And how to really use this life like we mean it. You know, to bring a vibrancy to it that brings us alive into the moment and really helps us to make these decisions during the course of the day. What do I want to be doing right now in the event that I die right now? You know, car goes through the yellow light and I'm crossing in the intersection. What do I want my mind to be? And it's practical. This isn't like some far-fetched kind of thinking. This is practical Dharma practice each day. And to use death as really a great tool to prioritize those things that really have meaning in our lives. So what I wanted to do is, I've got a little meditation here just for us to ponder three points that might be helpful. All right, and we're going to use what if. Okay, we're going to use a little bit of a what if thing. So find yourself, you know, put down your teacup, put down your breakfast, whatever you got there. And we're going to do three little things we're going to consider. So if we really got it in our hearts that death was certain and we didn't know when we would die, and the only thing that we took to the next life was the karma we created, name one thing that you would refrain from doing right now. What action of body, speech, and mind? If you knew this understanding and truth about death, what would you stop doing immediately? Okay, second thing to ponder. if you really got it in your heart that death was certain, and that you had no idea when it was going to happen, and that the only thing that you took to your next life was the karma you created, who would you want to forgive? And who would you want to ask forgiveness from? And then if you knew deep in your heart that death was certain, the time of death was uncertain, and all that you were going to take to your next life was the karma you created, what virtuous quality or what teaching of the Buddha would you commit to familiarizing your mind with right now? That would be so clear and strong at the time of death that it would arise spontaneously. One virtuous quality, one teaching of the Buddha that you would want in your mind and heart at the time of death. And then lastly, what ideas or what idea do you have that you could really sort of commit to right now to explore these three things, to implement one of them in your life? What virtuous quality? How could you do that? How could you go about getting ready to forgive somebody or to ask forgiveness? And what, you know, unethical thing, what non-virtuous thing do you have habituated in your life that you might want to make a commitment to considering doing differently or putting it down? What idea? Something simple, something you could do to start thinking about it. can't hear Grant. I can't hear you, Grant. Sorry. There we are. Yeah, there you are.
Thank you so much. So we do have a comment from Sandy. She says, too much of the time, I feel as if my vehicle is fueled by regular unleaded gas rather than premium supreme. It's half empty, or de-energized feeling keeps me listening regularly to the teachings about cultivating improved quality of life.
It's a lovely metaphor to continue. Thank you, Sandy. But to remember, if you want some premium fuel, create the causes for premium fuel. And take it a little bit at a time. You know, don't ever underestimate that you've got a lot going for you already. And really rejoice in that. And that's a good way to start creating the causes to have some premium fuel.
So while we wait to see if anybody else has anything, I have a question.
Sure.
In thinking about death.
Yeah. Well, in this particular Buddhist tradition, there is a whole part of what we call the Lam Rim that talks about the 9 points of death meditation. And it's almost like, Grant, these practices really bring it down to home. You know, I think sometimes death gets to be a rather ephemeral kind of thing. To really look at our lives, at personal experiences, to see the people in our lives. We had once, Venerable had us list all the people in our life that had died and what age they were and what they died from. And I did this when I was in my late 40s, and I didn't think I had that big of a list, but when I wrote down from the earliest time I was a child right up until I was 42 years old, I had a lot more people on that list. I mean, some of them were acquaintances, some people in the news, like, you know, just to put that list down and to see how old they were and what they died from, that was really quite informative for me to get this whole idea about the time of death is uncertain. So that was really helpful. I think that sometimes I look at the world, the way that Mother Nature, the way that right now we're in fall and so all the leaves are falling, that there is a dying process within the natural environment, this birthing and existing and then passing away. I find that sometimes if I see myself as a tree or I see myself as a flower going through this kind of same process, I can bring it more close to home as well. Yeah, it takes time. Our culture doesn't particularly have us take it to heart early on, and so I think it's a struggle.
Yes.
But worth thinking about.
Yes, and this contemplation, I think, helps a lot, and your whole talk and bringing it to really thinking about, you know, what if today was the day, in a very specific way to think about that possibility.
Yeah, we don't know. We really don't know.
So it looks like we don't have any more comments or questions at the moment.
Okay.
So we can wrap that. Thank you so much for your time and for the teaching.
Let's do a quick little dedication, Grant. We want to always sort of bookend our thinking about the Dharma with a motivation on one end and a dedication of the other. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore.